Nearly a year ago on May 15th, Brandon Johnson was sworn in as mayor of the city of Chicago. To say that a lot has happened since then is the queen of understatements. The former union organizer and Cook County commissioner was in charge. In this half hour, we get Mayor Johnson's take on it all. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Johnson doesn't hold a lot of news conferences, though he's been more accessible lately, and as he approaches his first anniversary in office, he's actually been anxious to talk about his accomplishments and challenges over the last 12 months. I spoke with him early one morning this past week about a range of topics, including violent crime and the migrant crisis, both of which are works in progress.
Well, you know, this first year in office, as you know, I inherited quite the crises with the migrant mission that we've endeavored to create a real operation that's centered around people's humanity. And of course, public safety is always top of mind for the people of Chicago. But what we've accomplished in this short year is that we went from a mission where migrants were sleeping on the floors of police districts, sleeping on floors in airports, and no real operational budget centered around it. We have since transformed that structure. There are no migrants that are sleeping on floors in police districts. We've cleared out our airports, and we've built an operation centered around people's humanity. Over the course of these last several months, it should also be noted that there has not been a single bus that has dropped migrants off in the city of Chicago since the end of last year. So we've literally created structure and order around a chaotic dynamic at the border. And it's been a lot of work, certainly. But again, the crises that I inherited, what we've built over this first year, it's an unprecedented level of coordination with all of our city agencies, our departments, the philanthropic community, the faith community, the business community, the state and the county. I've brought all of these forces together to create the type of structure and calm that, quite frankly, the governor of Texas is not interested in. As far as public... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask a quick follow-up there, though. Are you expecting that the buses will resume as we get closer to August when the DNC will be here?
Well, buses are being dropped off in the suburbs of Chicago. So that aspect of, you know, the mission, you know, we don't have any direct control over. Now, we've encouraged other suburban cities to work with us, and many of them have, to create some discipline and structure around this mission. It is evident that the governor of Texas is still committed to sowing chaos and disorder. However, in terms of the, I guess, the anticipation of more buses coming, we are in a much stronger position as a city to confront that type of, dynamic. You know, however, we don't have any control over that. Now, again, as far as, you know, community safety is concerned, since I've been in office, I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, for the first time in the history of Chicago, we have created a deputy mayor for community safety, and homicides are down. Shootings are down. The violent crime and criminal activity has been reduced on our CTA. There are key investments that we are making in order to address the historic violence that has unfortunately caused so much pain and turmoil over the course of generations. But with all of the work that we are doing, again, bringing people together, the full force of government, every single department, every single sister agency, the philanthropic community, the business community, Craig, you might be aware of this, they have committed to raising $100 million to help us combat the historic disinvestment that has been pervasive for a long time. I've committed $100 million in my budget to further address the issue of community and public safety. So again, homicides and shootings are down respectfully, and we still are very much committed to making more critical investments in the neighborhoods that have been marginalized for generations in order to address what precedes poverty, which unfortunately is violence.
Indeed. And, even when the statistics are encouraging, we still always come back to that question of perception. And people still, if you ask people, they still don't feel as safe. Even just this, we just had a young police officer, shot and killed in a carjacking, something that a lot of people are afraid of. The Cinco de Mayo celebration the parade had to be shortened because of violence nearby. So how do you combat the perception and get people to feel that the city is getting safer?
Yeah, a lot of what we have done has been centered around engaging the community. Look, there's not one single thing that will ultimately, create the safest environment. It's not policing alone. It has to be tethered to our commitment to creating jobs and opportunity for people, our commitment to creating more mental health related support services and resources for our people. These are, elements that we are continuously pushing forward. Again, community engagement is front and center. Where you have seen the greatest decline of homicides and shootings, there are 35 beats in the city of Chicago that have historically been the most violent sections of the city. And we're talking 53 to 55% of the overall violence in the city of Chicago occurs in 35 beats. We've seen a 35% decrease in homicides and 31% decrease in shootings in those communities. So people are far more engaged in this moment, and the work continues. Until we have a complete investments in our communities that will ultimately eradicate the type of trauma and turmoil that we are experiencing as residents in the city of Chicago, we have to continue to press forward. This is something that is always top of mind for me. Raising a family in Chicago, raising a family in a beautiful neighborhood like Austin, but yet the neighborhood that has been historically disinvested in, this is something that I've had a front row seat to, throughout my, time as a parent and as a resident in this city. So I do understand and get the trepidation that people are still experiencing. But the most important thing, though, to remember is, again, our homicides are down, our shootings are down, our investments are up. And that's how you ultimately build a better, stronger, safer Chicago.
And speaking of investments in communities, I want to go back to the migrant question for just a second, because as you know, at every city council meeting, there's resistance within some long neglected communities over migrant aid. How surprising was it, if at all, to see the depth and the breadth of the anger, some of it, as we've seen at the city council meetings, tinged with racism?
Well, again, as you know, we're talking neighborhoods on the west and south sides of the city of Chicago that have been neglected for 40 years. Whether that's Inglewood, North Lawndale, Roseland, Garfield Park, these are neighborhoods that have lost schools. Transportation has been cut off. The lack of access to mental health related services and healthcare as a whole. So that frustration is real. It's a frustration that I've experienced in the city of Chicago that led me into organizing and pushing back against political structures that have intentionally neglected these communities. And that is why it was imperative for my administration to invest in our youth employment, for instance. We're positioned right now to hire 28,000 young people this summer. We've already seen a 20% increase in the number of young people who have had jobs, of which 64% of them were Black children. 97% were Black and Brown children. It's why I invested $250 million to fight the homelessness crisis in this city. Another $100 million for violence prevention. But we've also been very clear about our bond deal. Craig, a $1.25 billion investment on the west and south sides of the city of Chicago to build housing and, of course, to create economic development. So when you put all of that together in less than a year, not only this significant bond deal, the largest bond investment in the history of Chicago, $250 million into the unhoused. We already have 100 homes that are affordable that we built within this first year. There are another 700 that are in the pipeline right now. We're building homes. We're creating economic development in those communities that have been historically neglected in, and I've done that in less than a year.
Your election was heralded as a true progressive agenda coming to City Hall. I suspect that the bond deal would be one of the things that I am asking about, but what are the things you're most proud of on that agenda that you've been able to do in this first year?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Again, you know, this bond deal is a big deal. I mean, it was intentional. I said from the very beginning, and I'm very proud of these accomplishments. I said from the very beginning that we have to invest in people, and we've done that. And what that has looked like besides the bond deal, again, $250 million into the unhoused, $100 million for violence prevention. We made a commitment to hire more young people. We've done that. We have the most significant paid time off ordinance in the country. 1.38 million people will have additional days that they can take off to spend time with their family or to do other things related to their own health. We have, of course, eliminated the subminimum wage. 100,000 workers, will get raises as a result of my administration. Those individuals, the vast majority of them are women of color. So very proud of that. You know, the fact that, you know, we have treatment, not trauma. This is an opportunity for us, again, to show how we provide mental health care services for the residents of Chicago and not just simply rely on policing. You know, this initiative for treatment, not trauma, had been lingering for years in city council. And in less than a year, we were able to move that agenda and, of course, working towards providing mental health related services. Those accomplishments, of course, are a big deal. These are areas that have been historically ignored and neglected for decades in this city. And we moved a very aggressive agenda because the people of Chicago were counting on me to get that done. And I'm very proud of that work that we've done together.
And, you know, there's always a little bit of, what have you done for me lately themes in government.
And listen, Craig, I'm learning, man. If when I wake up in the morning, if someone isn't mad at me, it probably means I'm no longer the mayor of Chicago. But exactly right, though. I mean, I understand that level of urgency to move with expediency. Over the next 3 years, of course, there's a lot of work that we will continue to build off of. But we've laid a very firm foundation, creating real economic stability within our communities while also addressing root causes of trauma in this city. It's been a remarkable journey to accomplish those things again within the first year of my administration.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Dellamore, and you're hearing a conversation I had with Mayor Brandon Johnson ahead of the one-year anniversary of his inauguration. We continue with talk about critics who are essentially inside the House. Now, I want to say I've heard and seen examples of the progressive wing of the city council at times biting its tongue, because there are a lot of people that don't want to publicly criticize one of their own, but there are occasional grumblings. One, the Bears stadium deal, a number of people feel, yes, the Bears stadium, we're all for that, but public funding, not so much. You know, when it's billionaire owners who are, you know, trying to stay on the lakefront, bring Chicago home, didn't make it across the finish line. But the need for, of course, as you point out, for affordable housing still there. There are tensions. And how do you negotiate, or how do you navigate is the better word, those tensions with people who strongly supported you, but are still chomping at the bit for things that they either want to see or don't want to see?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has to do with just, again, staying engaged with people. There is a much bigger table on the fifth floor now. There are people who have access to me and to the office that have never had access before. That's a win for the people of Chicago. That's something that progressives have been fighting for in this city for an inordinate amount of time. And I'm grateful that we have arrived here together. And we've also built relationships with people that along the way that may not have had experiences with us. You know, here's the reality though. We have a 100-year-old building that is owed in terms of debt hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's a depreciating asset. Now, I still call it an asset because it's the lakefront, right? But you have a 100-year-old building where there's hundreds of million dollars in debt. That is something that I have to solve for. That's my responsibility. And what I have proposed is that in order for us to keep the Bears in the city of Chicago, there has to be a clear public benefit and public use. So you have this 100-year-old building with hundreds of millions of dollars of debt that does not have a dome, and so it can't be utilized to its fullness. What I've simply proposed is that the restructuring of that entire section of the city where ownership places $2 billion on the table. That's more than we've ever seen. And then in order to make sure that the stadium is paid for, it's paid for by billionaires and visitors. I mean, that's essentially what we've solved for. So, and then not only is it paid for by billionaires and visitors, there's an opportunity to create more open green space, young people to participate on the lake with sports and recreation, an opportunity for small business and economic development. We're talking 43,000 jobs regionally, 24,000 jobs just for the city of Chicago. And then, of course, billions of dollars of income for those who actually work on this project. If someone has a better proposal, then billionaires and visitors paying for a stadium that's going to create permanent long-term economic development for the lakefront, I'm all ears. I'm all ears. And that's the point of my leadership. The people of Chicago elected me to put forth solutions to solve decades-old problems, none of which I created, all of which I inherited, to fix those problems while also responding to the real needs of working people. And if someone has other proposals that they wish to put forward, they should do that. Right now, we don't have that. We just have people speculating, hanging out on the sidelines, and not offering up anything of substance.
How do you feel the Park District makes out on this deal? Because, you know, I've heard questions about the fact that they get a lot of the revenue from any entertainment acts and the such that come to the stadium. And this would then go to the I mean, they own the property, but the revenue, it seems, at least from what I've seen of the deal, would go to the Bears. Does the Park District lose out in some ways?
Well, there is still room to negotiate, right? I mean, this is a proposal. What we have is, again, we have a 100-year-old building that is hundreds of millions of dollars in debt that is depreciating every single day without a dome. And I'm putting forth a solution where billionaires and visitors pay for a publicly owned building that allows for young people to participate. And then, of course, a 24/7, essentially 365 operation. And so, of course, I'm always going to work to ensure that the public benefits in the most with full maximum participation. But again, it's a proposal.
You've had, or at least the Governor Pritzker has, of course, expressed some misgivings about the public funding part of this. That is a typical of what we've seen over the last year. Some differences, not necessarily barbs flying back and forth, but how would you describe your relationship with Governor Pritzker on a range of issues?
Well, first of all, we have worked together and we've accomplished so much together. I mean, the migrant mission, you know, alone is a really good example of that. You know, working with the state of Illinois, working with the county government, both of those executives, President Preckwinkle and Governor Pritzker, have been strong partners in helping us address, you know, what essentially is a national, international crisis. You know, what I've made very clear from the very beginning is that the people of Chicago are counting on me to bring people together. And that includes executives at the state level and, of course, at the county level and at the federal level as well. You know, there's a real opportunity for us to do something transformational in the city and for the state of Illinois. Everyone knows that the state of Illinois is a beneficiary of Chicago's progress. And that is why I'm working hard every single day to speak to the interest of everyday people in the city of Chicago, because that's a benefit for Cook County. That's a benefit for the state of Illinois. And, you know, these accomplishments that we've been able to work through over the course of this first year is really setting our state up to be a model for the rest of the country.
Are you having any better fortune with the federal part of this of the equations here, because you know, we've been talking about seeing more federal money coming in for migrant aid and other things, but so far it's been more talk than money?
It has been. It certainly has been. You know, look, our state delegation is strong. Both of our senators, our congressional leaders, you know, as you know, Congressman Garcia and Congressman Davis, I mean, they are the foundation of the progressive movement in the city of Chicago, and they have been champions at the federal level. The challenge, of course, that we have at the federal level is that you have a former president that dictates what the Republican Party does. And, you know, unfortunately, those type of politics have prevented real substantive immigration reform to actually take place. And as long as Donald Trump is controlling the Republican Party, that creates, you know, a real hindrance for our ability to get the federal resources that we need to states across this country, cities across the country. I've had multiple conversations with mayors from other states. Just had a recent gathering of Black mayors from around the country, and they're all faced with the same dynamics that I'm faced with in the city: housing, education system, community safety, the migrant mission that we're all really trying to formulate something of real order that is centered around people's humanity. But yes, it has really been a strain on local municipalities because the federal government has abdicated its duties.
Well, one other thing I want to touch on, even though I don't believe the public much cares about how we in the media feel about things. but how would you assess your relationship with us in the news media? And you know, are there things that you would change, or are there things that you are changing on your end?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, what I do appreciate about, you know, my relationship with the media, you know, I believe that media wants to get the story right, to reflect what people are hearing. And, you know, I want to get the story right, and I want the media to hear what I'm hearing, right? The media speaks to people, and I speak to thousands of people every single week in this city. And what people want to know is, how are we addressing their core issues, and how are their values showing up every single day? And, you know, for me, it's the fact that, you know, the story of opening two mental health clinics that were shut down two administrations ago, like, that's important. That's a big accomplishment. The fact that, again, we're not only hiring more young people, but we're making critical investments in the neighborhoods in which those young people are being hired from, building homes, creating real economic development for people, and understanding that, you know, look, the perspective that I bring to this moment, it is a unique perspective. And I say that with all due humility. You know, Craig, let's just be honest here, okay? Every single mayor prior to me had a relationship with what was referred to as machine politics. Every other mayor. And you can go all the way, I mean, you can go back in time. You know, as much as I admire Mayor Harold Washington's legacy, and everyone knows that he was a part of the initial slate that Richard J. Daley put together when he ran for state rep. Jane Byrne, Rahm Emanuel, Lori Lightfoot, right? All of these individuals had real strong ties to operations that have been situated. It didn't mean that they were bad. It doesn't mean that they weren't progressive. I'm just saying that you're talking about a public school teacher who was an organizer who had no political ties to any type of machine or business operation. And that expression alone is something that I would like to see that projected more. I would, because it would help people understand why we're moving at the pace that we're moving at. In less than a year, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in new investment. Again, a bond deal that is the largest investment in terms of a bond in the history of Chicago. But that was because we worked with people. That's a moment that I'm very proud of. And the people of Chicago deserve to know that every single crisis that we are dealing with, not one of them did I create. Not one. Not one. And so I actually believe that the relationship between, you know, me and the media, there's a real opportunity for us to tell a unique story that 100 years from now, people can look back at and say, that was a pivotal moment in Chicago's history, and we did our darnest to get it right.
And that's where the conversation was ended. I want to thank Mayor Brandon Johnson for spending the half hour with us. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM. Nearly a year ago, on May 15th, Brandon Johnson was sworn in as mayor of the city of Chicago. To say that a lot has happened since then is the queen of understatements. The former union organizer and Cook County commissioner was in charge. In this half hour, we get Mayor Johnson's take on it all. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Mayor Johnson doesn't hold a lot of news conferences, though he's been more accessible lately. And as he approaches his first anniversary in office, he's actually been anxious to talk about his accomplishments and challenges over the last 12 months. I spoke with him early one morning this past week about a range of topics, including violent crime and the migrant crisis, both of which are works in progress.
Well, you know, this first year in office, as you know, I inherited quite the crises with the migrant mission that we've endeavored to create a real operation that's centered around people's humanity. And of course, public safety is always top of mind for the people of Chicago. But what we've accomplished in this short year is that we went from a mission where migrants were sleeping on the floors of police districts, sleeping on floors in airports, and no real operational budget centered around it. We have since transformed that structure. There are no migrants that are sleeping on floors in police districts. We've cleared out our airports, and we've built an operation centered around people's humanity. Over the course of these last several months, it should also be noted that there has not been a single bus that has dropped migrants off in the city of Chicago since the end of last year. So we've literally created structure and order around a chaotic dynamic at the border. And it's been a lot of work, certainly. But again, the crises that I inherited, what we've built over this first year, it's an unprecedented level of coordination with all of our city agencies, our departments, the philanthropic community, the faith community, the business community, the state and the county. I've brought all of these forces together to create the type of structure and calm that, quite frankly, the governor of Texas is not interested in. As far as public, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask a quick follow-up there, though. Are you expecting that the buses will resume as we get closer to August when the DNC will be here?
Well, buses are being dropped off in the suburbs of Chicago. So that aspect of, you know, the mission, you know, we don't have any direct control over. Now, we've encouraged other suburban cities to work with us, and many of them have. To create some discipline and structure around this mission. It is evident that the governor of Texas is still committed to sowing chaos and disorder. However, in terms of the, I guess, the anticipation of more buses coming, we are in a much stronger position as a city to confront that type of, I guess, dynamic. You know, however, we don't have any control over that. Now, again, as far as, you know, community safety is concerned, since I've been in office, I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, for the first time in the history of Chicago, we have created a deputy mayor for community safety, and homicides are down, shootings are down. The violent crime and criminal activity has been reduced on our CTA. There are key investments that we are making in order to address the historic violence that has have unfortunately caused so much pain and turmoil over the course of generations. But with all of the work that we are doing, again, bringing people together, the full force of government, every single department, every single sister agency, the philanthropic community, the business community. The business community, Craig, you might be aware of this, they have committed to raising $100 million to help us combat you know, the historic disinvestment that has been pervasive for a long time. I've committed $100 million in my budget to further address the issue of community and public safety. So again, homicides and shootings are down respectfully, and we still are very much committed to making more critical investments in the neighborhoods that have been marginalized for generations in order to address what precedes poverty, which unfortunately is violence.
Indeed. And, even when the statistics are encouraging, we still always come back to that question of perception, and people still, if you ask people, they still don't feel as safe. We just had a young police officer, shot and killed in a carjacking, something that a lot of people are afraid of. The Cinco de Mayo celebration the parade had to be shortened because of violence nearby. So how do you combat the perception and get people to feel that the city is getting safer?
A lot of what we have done has been centered around engaging the community. Look, there's not one single thing that will ultimately, create the safest environment. It's not policing alone. It has to be tethered to our commitment to creating jobs and opportunity for people, our commitment to creating more mental health related support services and resources for our people. These are, elements that we are continuously pushing forward. Again, community engagement is front and center. Where you have seen the greatest decline of homicides and shootings, there are 35 beats in the city of Chicago that have historically been the most violent sections of the city. And we're talking 53 to 55% of the overall violence in the city of Chicago occurs in 35 beats. We've seen a 35% decrease in homicides and 31% decrease in shootings in those communities. So people are far more engaged in this moment, and the work continues. Until we have complete investments in our communities that will ultimately eradicate the type of trauma and turmoil that we are experiencing as residents in the city of Chicago, we have to continue to press forward. This is something that is always top of mind for me. Raising a family in Chicago, raising a family in a beautiful neighborhood like Austin, but yet the neighborhood that has been, historically disinvested in, this is something that I've had a front row seat to, throughout my, time as a parent and as a resident in this city. So I do understand and get the trepidation that people are still experiencing. But the most important thing, though, to remember is, again, our homicides are down, our shootings are down, our investments are up, and that's how you ultimately build a better, stronger, safer Chicago.
And speaking of investments in communities, I want to go back to the migrant question for just a second, because as you know, at every city council meeting, there's resistance within some long neglected communities over migrant aid. How surprising was it, if at all, to see the depth and the breadth of the anger, some of it, as we've seen at the city council meetings, tinged with racism?
We're talking neighborhoods on the west and south sides of the city of Chicago that have been neglected for 40 years. Whether that's Inglewood, North Lawndale, Roseland, Garfield Park, these are neighborhoods that have lost schools. Transportation has been cut off. The lack of access to mental health related services and healthcare as a whole. So that frustration is real. It's a frustration that I've experienced in the city of Chicago that led me into organizing and pushing back against political structures that have intentionally neglected these communities. And that is why it was imperative for my administration to invest in our youth employment, for instance. We're positioned right now to hire 28,000 young people this summer. We've already seen a 20% increase in the number of young people who have had jobs, of which 64% of them were Black children. 97% were Black and brown children. It's why I invested $250 million to fight the homelessness crisis in this city. Another $100 million for violence prevention. But we've also been very clear about our bond deal. Craig, a $1.25 billion investment on the west and south sides of the city of Chicago to build housing and, of course, to create economic development. So when you put all of that together in less than a year, not only this significant bond deal, the largest bond investment in the history of Chicago, $250 million into the unhoused. We already have 100 homes that are affordable that we built within this first year. There are another 700 that are in the pipeline right now. We're building homes. We're creating economic development in those communities that have been historically neglected in. And I've done that in less than a year.
Your election was heralded as a true progressive agenda coming to City Hall. I suspect that the bond deal would be one of the things that I am asking about. But what are the things you're most proud of on that agenda that you've been able to do in this first year?
Yeah, thank you for that question. Again, you know, this bond deal is a big deal. I mean, it was intentional. I said from the very beginning, and I'm very proud of these accomplishments. I said from the very beginning that we have to invest in people, and we've done that. And what that has looked like besides the bond deal, again, $250 million into the unhoused, $100 million for violence prevention. We made a commitment to hire more young people. We've done that. We have the most significant paid time off ordinance in the country. 1.38 million people will have additional days that they can take off to spend time with their family or to do other things related to their own health. We have, of course, eliminated the subminimum wage. 100,000 workers, will get raises as a result of my administration. Those individuals, the vast majority of them are women of color. I'm so very proud of that. You know, the fact that, you know, we have treatment, not trauma. This is an opportunity for us, again, to show how we provide mental health care services for the residents of Chicago and not just simply rely on policing. You know, this initiative for treatment, not trauma, had been lingering for years in city council. And in less than a year, we were able to move that agenda. And of course, working towards providing mental health related services. Those accomplishments, of course, are a big deal. These are areas that have been historically ignored and neglected for decades in this city. And we moved a very aggressive agenda because the people of Chicago were counting on me to get that done. And I'm very proud of that work that we've done together.
And, you know, there's always a little bit of, what have you done for me lately? Themes in government.
And listen, Craig, I'm learning, man. If when I wake up in the morning, if someone isn't mad at me, it probably means I'm no longer the mayor of Chicago. But exactly right, though. I mean, I'll understand that level of urgency to move with expediency. Over the next 3 years, of course, there's a lot of work that we will continue to build off of. But we've laid a very firm foundation, creating real economic stability within our communities while also addressing root causes of trauma in this city. It's been a remarkable journey to accomplish those things again within the first year of my administration.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Dellamore, and you're hearing a conversation I had with Mayor Brandon Johnson ahead of the one-year anniversary of his inauguration. We continue with talk about critics who are essentially inside the House. Now, I want to say I've heard and seen examples of the progressive wing of the city council at times biting its tongue, because there are a lot of people that don't want to publicly criticize one of their own, but there are occasional grumblings. One, Bears stadium deal, a number of people feel, yes, the Bears stadium, we're all for that, but public funding, not so much. You know, when it's billionaire owners who are, you know, trying to stay on the lakefront, bring Chicago home, didn't make it across the finish line. But the need for, of course, as you point out, for affordable housing still there. There are tensions. And how do you negotiate, or how do you navigate is the better word, those tensions with people who strongly supported you, but are still chomping at the bit for things that they either want to see or don't want to see?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has to do with just, again, staying engaged with people. There is a much bigger table on the fifth floor now. There are people who have access to me and to the office that have never had access before. That's a win for the people of Chicago. That's something that progressives have been fighting for in this city for an inordinate amount of time. And I'm grateful that we have arrived here together. And we've also built relationships with people that along the way that may not have had experiences with us. You know, here's the reality though. We have a 100-year-old building that is owed, in terms of debt, hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's a depreciating asset. Now, I still call it an asset because it's the lakefront, right? But you have a 100-year-old building where there's hundreds of millions of dollars in debt. That is something that I have to solve for. That's my responsibility. And what I have proposed is that in order for us to keep the Bears in the city of Chicago, there has to be a clear public benefit and public use. So you have this 100-year-old building with hundreds of millions of dollars of debt that does not have a dome, and so it can't be utilized to its fullness. What I have simply proposed is that the restructuring of that entire section of the city where ownership places $2 billion on the table. That's more than we've ever seen. And then in order to make sure that the stadium is paid for, it's paid for by billionaires and visitors. I mean, that's essentially what we've solved for. So, and then not only is it paid for by billionaires and visitors, there's an opportunity to create more open green space, young people to participate on the lake with sports and recreation, an opportunity for small business and economic development. We're talking 43,000 jobs regionally, 24,000 jobs just for the city of Chicago. And then, of course, billions of dollars of income for those who actually work on this project. If someone has a better proposal, then billionaires and visitors paying for a stadium that's going to create permanent long-term economic development for the lakefront, I'm all ears. I'm all ears. And that's the point of my leadership. The people of Chicago elected me to put forth solutions to solve decades-old problems, none of which I created, all of which I inherited, to fix those problems while also responding to the real needs of working people. And if someone has other proposals that they wish to put forward, they should do that. Right now, we don't have that. We just have people speculating, hanging out on the sidelines, and not offering up anything of substance.
How do you feel the Park District makes out on this deal? Because, you know, I've heard questions about the fact that they get a lot of the revenue from any entertainment acts and the such that come to the stadium. And this would then go to they own the property, but the revenue, it seems, at least from what I've seen of the deal, would go to the Bears. Does the Park District lose out in some ways?
Well, there are still room to negotiate, right? I mean, this is a proposal. What we have is, again, we have a 100-year-old building that is hundreds of millions of dollars in debt that is depreciating every single day without a dome. And I'm putting forth a solution where billionaires and visitors pay for a publicly owned building that allows for young people to participate. And then, of course, a 24/7, essentially 365 operation. And so, of course, I'm always going to work to ensure that the public benefits in the most with full maximum participation. But again, it's a proposal.
You've had, or at least the Governor Pritzker has, of course, expressed some misgivings about the public funding part of this. That is a typical of what we've seen over the last year. Some differences, not necessarily barbs flying back and forth, but how would you describe your relationship with Governor Pritzker on a range of issues?
Well, first of all, we have worked together and we've accomplished so much together. I mean, the migrant mission, you know, alone is a really good example of that. You know, working with the state of Illinois, working with the county government, both of those executives, President Preckwinkle and Governor Pritzker, have been strong partners in helping us address, you know, what essentially is a national, international crisis. You know, what I've made very clear from the very beginning is that the people of Chicago are counting on me to bring people together. And that includes executives at the state level and, of course, at the county level and at the federal level as well. You know, there's a real opportunity for us to do something transformational in the city and for the state of Illinois. Everyone knows that the state of Illinois is a beneficiary of Chicago's progress. And that is why I'm working hard every single day to speak to the interest of everyday people in the city of Chicago, because that's a benefit for Cook County. That's a benefit for the state of Illinois. And, you know, these accomplishments that we've been able to work through over the course of this first year is really setting our state up to be a model for the rest of the country.
Are you having any better fortune with the federal part of this, of the equations here? Because, you know, we've been talking about seeing more federal money coming in for migrant aid and other things, but so far it's been more talk than money.
It has been. It certainly has been. You know, look, our state delegation is strong. Both of our senators, our congressional leaders, you know, as you know, Congressman Garcia and Congressman Davis, I mean, they are the foundation of the progressive movement in the city of Chicago, and they have been champions at the federal level. The challenge, of course, that we have at the federal level is that you have a former president that dictates what the Republican Party does. And, you know, unfortunately, those type of politics have prevented real substantive immigration reform to actually take place. And as long as Donald Trump is controlling the Republican Party, that creates, you know, a real hindrance for our ability to get the federal resources that we need to states across this country, cities across the country. I've had multiple conversations with mayors from other states, just had a recent gathering of Black mayors from around the country, and they're all faced with the same dynamics that I'm faced with in the city: housing, education system, community safety, the migrant mission that we're all really trying to formulate something of real order that is centered around people's humanity. But yes, it has really been a strain on local municipalities because the federal government has abdicated its duties.
Mm. Well, one other thing I want to touch on, even though I don't believe the public much cares about how we in the media feel about things, but how would you assess your relationship with us in the news media? And you know, are there things that you would change, or are there things that you are changing on your end?
Well, I mean, what I do appreciate about, my relationship with the media. I believe that media wants to get the story right, to reflect what people are hearing. I want to get the story right, and I want the media to hear what I'm hearing, right? The media speaks to people, and I speak to thousands of people every single week in this city. And what people want to know is, how are we addressing their core issues, and how are their values showing up every single day? And, for me, it's the fact that, the story of opening two mental health clinics that were shut down two administrations ago, like, that's important. That's a big accomplishment. The fact that, again, we're not only hiring more young people, but we're making critical investments in the neighborhoods in which those young people are being hired from, building homes, creating real economic development for people, and understanding that, look, the perspective that I bring to this moment, it is a unique perspective. And I say that with all due humility. Craig, let's just be honest here, okay? Every single mayor prior to me had a relationship with what was referred to as machine politics. Every other mayor, and you can go all the way, you can go back in time. As much as I admire Mayor Harold Washington's legacy, and everyone knows that he was a part of the initial slate that Richard J. Daley put together when he ran for state rep. Jane Byrne, Rahm Emanuel, Lori Lightfoot, right? All of these individuals had real strong ties to operations that have been situated. It didn't mean that they were bad. It doesn't mean that they weren't progressive. I'm just saying that you're talking about a public school teacher who was an organizer who had no political ties to any type of machine or business operation. And that expression alone is something that I would like to see that projected more. I would, because it would help people understand why we're moving at the pace that we're moving at. In less than a year, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in new investment. Again, a bond deal that is the largest investment in terms of a bond in the history of Chicago. But that was because we worked with people. That's a moment that I'm very proud of. And the people of Chicago deserve to know that every single crisis that we are dealing with, not one of them did I create. Not one. And so I actually believe that the relationship between me and the media, there's a real opportunity for us to tell a unique story that 100 years from now, people can look back at and say, that was a pivotal moment in Chicago's history, and we did our darnest to get it right.
And that's where the conversation was ended. I want to thank Mayor Brandon Johnson for spending the half hour with us. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.